Today, we're going to be talking about a topic that I think is very relevant to our podcast listening audience. Are you familiar with feeling like you've been put into a container because you act a certain way? This is the way you're expected to act. Today, we're going to learn how can you break through those boxes. As an engineering leader, you know firsthand that achieving work-life balance can be hard. Many business owners struggle with the balance between their personal lives and their work. This leads to stress and a feeling of regret. But that's not the case for the listeners of the Engineer Your Success podcast with Dr. James Bryant. This podcast provides tools, tips, and techniques to help you achieve success both in business and in life. Tune in. Let's engineer your success today. I want to welcome you to the Engineer Your Success podcast. My name is Dr. James Bryant, your host for the show. This podcast provides tools, tips, and techniques to help you achieve success both in business and in life. It is my pleasure to guide you in your journey of designing and living a life where you are winning at work and at home. And I hope that you are having a great week. We have a very special guest and an expert to talk about breaking boxes. Betsy, will you please introduce yourself to our podcast audience?
James, thank you for allowing me to be here on your podcast today. I really enjoy listening to your episodes. I am a highly curious person who is always looking to grow, explore, and come up with new ideas, meet new people, put myself in new situations, get myself outside of boxes that I typically find myself in. But to pay the bills, I am in real estate. I have a real estate brokerage, a property management company. I have a real estate school. I own a title company. And most passionately for me is the nonprofit I started in 2018 to help provide more affordable housing to families in our community.
In your book, Breaking Boxes, it discusses various invisible boxes that we find ourselves in throughout life. So can you share some specific experience that made you aware of these boxes and what inspired you to write a book on this topic?
Sure. Let me take the second question first. What inspired me to write the book was I am currently 55 years of age. In my late 40s, maybe 47-ish, I felt like I had chipped off all the boxes in terms of what it meant to be successful and have a fulfilling life. Great businesses, a wonderful family, a great support system. On paper, it looked great.
Yeah.
But I found myself not fulfilled. Honestly, it took me a couple of years to even admit that to myself because I struggled internally. How do I have the right to even say that out loud? I'm so blessed in so many ways that I felt like I have to be happy because this is what society tells you. This is what success looks like. This is what happiness looks like. But I wasn't happy. I remember scrolling through the internet one day in this time of turmoil, and I came across a picture of this girl. I don't know if you can see it.
No, it's different.
So it's a picture of a girl. She's about 4 years old. She's in a one-piece bathing suit. Her arms and legs are spread out as wide as can be on this plush green grass. She's looking up at the sky, and rain is pouring down on her face, and she has this smile of pure, unbridled joy.
Yeah.
And I felt so drawn to her. I printed out the photo. I made it my screensaver at work, on my computers, on my phone. Something about her spoke to me. And across the middle of her bathing suit, it's printed the words, "Remember her. She's still there inside you, waiting. Mm-hmm. Let's go get her."
Yeah.
About a year later, I live in Florida. We have hurricanes in Florida, and we were hunkering down for a hurricane. I always have projects for hurricanes because the electricity goes out and you have to have something to do. During this particular hurricane, my project was to put photos that I had accumulated in boxes over the years into photo albums. I'm putting in the photo albums and I get to the bottom and I put the photo boxes in the trash. And as I put the last photo box in the trash, I noticed there's a photo face down. And I pull out the photo and I can't see it because it's dark. I take it over to the candle that's lit. I look at the picture and I was like, oh my gosh. And I run with the candle to my home office next to the picture that I have. I look back at the picture that I'm holding. It's a picture of a little girl in her favorite red striped one-piece bathing suit.
Oh, wow.
In the ocean, standing about 3 feet in front of her father. And she's looking like she's plunging towards a wave. And her smile is pure, unbridled joy. On the bottom of that photograph, it's faded black handwriting of my mother's that says Betsy, age 4.
Oh, wow.
And I said, it was like a bolt of lightning, not from the hurricane outside, went through me, because it was like, this was the disconnect. Somehow I had lost my way. How do I find my way back? Through a long journey of journaling, therapy, meditation, yoga, bioenergetic, so many different things I did over several years, I saw this common theme of feeling when I felt most not me and most away from this 4-year-old girl was when I was felt that I was in a box. Throughout my life, different boxes, whether it's your family of origin puts you in, your religion, your industry, your gender, the roles you play in society. And I wasn't recognizing that I had options. And not all boxes are bad. Some boxes are great for your whole lifetime. I love being in the mom box. I chose that willingly. I will never trade my place in the mom box. But there's other boxes that I personally felt like I long overstayed my welcome.
Okay.
And so it was just through that journey, journaling and recognizing this common theme was the inspiration to write the book. Because I thought, if I'm going through this, my goal for the book was not, everyone thought when I was writing a book that I'm writing it on real estate and how to build a real estate empire. Yeah. It's not a lead gen book. I'm not trying to sell real estate. My goal was if I could help one person see their life or an aspect of their life in a different way that improved their life, then the effort was worth it.
That's an amazing story. And it brings to mind what happened to the little child that was joyful and playful, full of joy about life. It wasn't concerned about what other people thought or expectations, just happy.
Yeah.
That's what it reminds me of. And then when I hear you talk about boxes, you had mentioned that you had checked off all of the boxes in terms of the things that were supposed to make you happy or were supposed to define success. You get to define success. You don't have to let society or other people define success for you.
Mm-hmm. For me personally, it's living an authentic life, true to myself and my core values. I spent a lot of my career, and I still do, focused on my business's core values, which, you know, the mission, the vision, and the core values. But then we go home, we don't spend that kind of time on what are our family's core values or what are my core values as a person. Mm-hmm. I teach this to my agents and staff now because it's been so life-changing to me. And a lot of people, especially the newer agents, are like, I don't know what my core values are. And I said, okay. I said, let's start. Take a look at your calendar. Take a look at your checkbook. Or right now, it's Venmo, PayPal. How do you spend your time and money? Now, you may not like what, but those are your values right now.
Yeah.
And if you're not feeling happy, there's probably a disconnect between how you're spending your time and money and what you truly believe or what your true core values are. And let's figure out how we can get away for greater authenticity and getting you into a life of living out those core values on a day-to-day, minute-by-minute basis.
No, I absolutely agree. When you think about breaking out of societal or self-imposed boxes, that can be challenging for people. Sometimes it can be overwhelming just to think about how do I break out of this box? I guess first, and you talk about this in your book, you have to be aware that there is a box. So there's a level of self-awareness there. But based on your experiences, your research, and the things that you were putting together to the book, what are some of the biggest obstacles that people face when they're trying to break free from these constraints?
I think the biggest obstacle we all face is fear. For me, it's been fear of loss of a primary relationship, whether it's platonic, romantic, familial, or fear of financial security. One of the biggest boxes I broke out of years ago, and it doesn't sound big, but it was, to me, it was like almost like life or death, because in my family, the expectation was you're going to be a physician. Your dad was a physician. Your twin sister's a physician. Your older sister's a physician. They married physicians. That's what we do in our family. And I was, and I felt so, it was interesting now looking back three decades later, I got good grades. I didn't do drugs. I didn't drink. I was at a great school. My parents, and so when I finally told my parents, and my parents were disappointed. And when I finally got the courage to tell them that I was getting out of pre-med and taking business classes, you would have thought I had gone to jail. But in my family, it was, that could be shattering. Mm-hmm. And they only wanted what was best for me. They came, my family generations ago came through Ellis Island. They were such hard workers. They built up what they have. And so they knew that to be a secure way of life. And yeah. So they wanted that for their daughters. And they provided it education-wise and support-wise. They provided that so that could happen for us. So it was out of love that they did that. But from the time that I was a little girl, I was an entrepreneur. I had no desire to be a physician. And even then, when I told them this decision, they were not happy. And then at the end of college, that I wasn't going to business school. The model in medicine, you go right into medical school. Mm-hmm. Well, then I had to tell them, I'm not going to go get a graduate degree right now. I'm going to go work for 2 years and then go back and get a graduate degree. And that was another obstacle because that wasn't their model. And they thought, they said, you're never going to go back to school. Once you get out in the real world, you're never going to want to get educated. I felt like a failure. Mm. It was a huge decision for me to make. And now they're obviously fine with it. But it did take some time. And it was just an invisible box that I felt very much confined in. I had grown up working in the hospital system. I got a business degree in marketing, which was my true passion, and in healthcare management. And I went into healthcare. My first career was a decade in pharmaceutical marketing, I think subconsciously to placate that desire of them wanting me to be in healthcare. It was only after a life change, I got a divorce when my girls were 1 and 2. I thought, this is a time when I can reinvent myself and truly do what I want to do. And that's when I got into real estate.
What was the event that pushed you over the edge to say that I have to totally break out of this box and do something fulfilling to me?
What happened was I was in Philadelphia and when I found myself suddenly single, I knew I needed familial support to raise my girls. So we moved home to Gainesville. Okay. I moved into my childhood bedroom and for 6 months I was there. My parents were incredibly supportive of me and my girls. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of time to think, what do I want to do next? There's no strong pharmaceutical industry in Florida. So I had to find something. And my plan B was to go back into that healthcare system and go into marketing. But I said, you know what? I was at Wharton in Philadelphia. One of the classes I got to take was gutting row homes and rebuilding them for at-risk families. And getting to see the impact that housing can make on the trajectory of a family always never left my mind. And I thought, wow, if I can make an impact doing something that I love, wouldn't that be phenomenal? I always thought that was something people say, but not really do that. I gave myself 2 years. I said, I got 2 years, give it a try. If I like it and I succeed, I'll stay in it. If not, I'll go back into the healthcare system. Fortunately, I was very blessed and doors opened and the community embraced me. I was able to stay in real estate.
Oh, that is an awesome story. There are people listening that may feel confined by a box or several boxes. Mm-hmm. What's some pieces of advice that you would give them to help them start breaking free to live the life that they want?
Like you had said earlier, the key thing is awareness. And for me, that was I had to take a step back because to become aware, you have to feel. I grew up in a home where feelings weren't really talked about. It was all thinking. Yeah. And it was, what do you think about? What do the facts tell you? But feelings were relayed to me as being very unreliable and fleeting. And you don't make decisions based on feelings. And so I really was cut off from how I physically and mentally felt about things. And so that's why I think I lived in boxes way too long. So getting in touch with feelings, and that's a whole process in of itself. I remember when I went to therapy the first day, she's, okay, how do you feel? And I said, I feel great. She said, what other feelings do you experience sometimes? At first, I didn't understand what she was saying. She said, good or bad? I said, yeah, I either feel good or I feel bad. And she's like, give me some other adjectives. I didn't even have the vocabulary to describe other emotions that I felt. It's hard to embrace them if you can't name them.
Yeah.
So for me, the first thing was, I still have it. I have a feelings wheel and you can print them off the internet and it's great. You start out with, I feel good. And it says, okay, these are your choices if you feel good. It's like one of six things. And then it's, okay, if you're feeling excited, these are six more choices. And it gets further and further refined. So you really can see the nuances of the different emotions that you're feeling. I have an app on my phone. It's called How We Feel. And I have it set so it reminds me about six times a day to check in. And it gives me this range of feelings. You pick the setting that you're in, the people that you're in, and what you're doing. And you really start to understand, when are you feeling good? When are you in flow? It's, you move towards that which feels good, that which makes you feel lighter. I was moving in the direction of that which I wanted to avoid, whatever I was fearing. That's how I was making my decisions. And so now I try to make it, what feels lighter? What feels freer? What feels like it's based in love? I actually have a habit tracker every night. I track myself to see, did I behave in those ways? Did I act in those ways? It's freeing to be able to move in that direction rather than live your life in fear.
I think that's beautiful. So give yourself permission to feel. Two, learn how to articulate and name your feeling. Being able to define it, being able to speak it out loud gives it life.
Yeah. The third thing is you have to have the courage to be okay with the repercussion. You have to develop a strong skin. You have to be confident in you love yourself. You respect yourself. You have to honor yourself and know that's for your highest good. And if you're honoring yourself, that's really in everyone's highest good. We have that confidence. That's the key, the confidence and the courage to step out of a box that might ruffle some people's feathers. I remember once, a very simple box. I used to get invited to lunch meetings all the time. Let's do lunch. Let me talk to you over lunch. I hate lunch meetings. I'm an introvert. I don't like sitting down at a restaurant and chat.
Yeah.
But I always thought, oh, you got to do this. That's what people do. Several years ago, I said, I'm not doing lunches. The next time someone called me and said, let's grab lunch, I said, oh, I don't do lunch. What? I said, I just don't do lunch. You're welcome to come into my office and we can chat for 20 minutes. You can call me on the phone. I don't do lunches.
Yeah.
So something as simple as that, but just being able to recognize, why am I doing this? I hate it. And crafting it so that it's still a win, you feel better about it.
I love that. And as you're talking, I think that people remain in boxes. There's probably several different reasons, but it could be something that happened when you were a child causing that fear. But also, we honor the feelings and the values of others more than we do ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so we're putting their preferences, their needs, their desires ahead of ours instead of considering both.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that you need to be inconsiderate of other people.
Right.
But oftentimes, we consider others without truly considering ourselves. What are some tools or suggestions that you would have for business owners or entrepreneurs when it comes to the concepts of breaking boxes?
I think, and it was from my journey, recognizing where there's gaps in your life.
Okay.
Where is a discomfort? What aren't you? Sounds morbid, but it's not. I, at the end of every day, and sometimes throughout the day, I ask myself, this could be the last day I'm here. Am I living? If this was my last day, is this an okay last day? That changes so many things. That changes what you say yes to. That changes how you spend our most precious asset, which is our time. Mm-hmm. It also protects your mind and what you allow in and out of your mind, whether it's through your ears or your eyes, and the people around you. So just recognizing where there might be a disconnect in your life, where are you not seeing what you hope to have seen? I think it does all start back to your core values and looking at, what are your life pillars? What are your goals? I do a 10-year vision exercise every year. I write a letter to myself 10 years from now, looking back in the present tense. But where's there a gap between where I say I want to be in 10, 20 years and what I'm living now? And what do I have to change to bridge or narrow that gap?
Yeah, it sounds very similar to a process that we take clients through. I call it the Engineer's Blueprint for Success. Step one, focus on what matters most. We'll ask people, what really matters to you? And they said, my family, my faith, finances, and all of these things. So the next thing that we do is look at the calendar. We do a time audit. Are you actually investing your most precious resource in the things that you say matter most? And if you're not, there's a gap. We help people to visualize, what does life look like when that gap is closed? What would life be like if you're actually living this out? We attach to that emotion, try to anchor on that, and then design a plan to actually get them there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last step in the Engineer's Blueprint is to execute that plan. It was a very similar process to what you're talking about. And that visualization piece is key. the execution piece is key as well. Mm-hmm. I typically end my podcast episode saying that many people know what to do, fewer people know how to do it. But there is a select group of people that actually follow through and do it. So it's not enough to know what, it's not enough to know how. You actually have to do it in order to make the impact you want to make.
We encourage, and I'm a big believer in this, when you know what your values are, what your life pillars are, mm-hmm. I encourage my agents and staff to seek mentors in mm-hmm. each of those life pillars. Your business mentor is most likely not going to be your spiritual mentor. It's really important to have mentors. Coaches are different, but mentors who are 5, 6, 7 steps ahead of you. Mm-hmm. And mentor, people get, sometimes they get a little bit reluctant about it. And like, oh, I don't want to ask somebody to be my mentor. I'm like, you don't have to ask them. Just stalk them on the internet. See what they do. See, what are they reading? Who are they interacting with? You can learn a lot just by watching from afar. Mm-hmm. I'm very visual. If I see somebody doing something, it's mm-hmm. so much easier for me to be like, oh, okay, I get that. That makes sense. I think it helps narrow that gap more quickly when you can see other people doing what you would like to have in your life being played out in front of you.
There's a concept that you talk about in the book that I think is based off of what you guys do on the real estate side. And that's the concept of buy boxes. And mm-hmm. I think you talk about it in the book in terms of buy boxes for your personal and professional relationships. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, buy box is when you have a buyer on the phone, they may tell you, I want a three bedroom, two bath house, Marion County, has to have a pool, at least an acre, 450,000 or more, 2,500 square feet or greater. Those fields are what we call a buy box. Mm-hmm. If people don't tell us that, we ask them for their buy box because it makes the decision much more objective, especially like when you're looking at tons of homes, people go, okay, does the house meet the buy box criteria? Because if it doesn't, we're not going to go look at it. So it really helps you narrow down your decision-making. And when I see a tool that works, I try to apply it in other areas of my life. And so that tool is something that I've applied to my personal life where mm-hmm. if I'm trying to make, as we get older, I think it's harder and harder to make true friends. And so I used it for my friend box. What are the attributes that somebody that I really want to have a meaningful relationship with, what are those qualities I'm searching for? How do I seek those out? And I have a friend buy box. I have a I'm single. I have a romantic buy box, things that deal breakers and deal makers, right?
Yeah.
And then it's interesting because as you grow and meet more people and you're in more relationships, you may put more things in the buy box. You may take one out depending on your experiences, but it really helps when you might veer off track, it centers you back. Because this is what you said was important to you. So if you're going to veer off track, consciously do it and intentionally.
It's intentional. It brings you back to here are the things that I said that were important.
Yeah.
Are these things still important?
Right.
Or am I willing to remove this thing out of the box that I've defined for myself?
Right.
Am I willing to move that out in order for X to happen?
Right.
It makes the decision-making process a lot easier and helps you make intentional choices versus choices that are just blowing with the wind.
Correct.
Betsy, in writing the book and reflecting on your own journey, what's the most important insight or message that you'd like for our listeners to take away from our discussion today?
Oh, I would just love if everybody would have the courage to get out of boxes that no longer serve them. And it's so much harder than it is to say, because you are going to ruffle feathers. You're going to have rejection. It will mean a loss of some sort mm-hmm. a lot of the time. But you move into much more of a life of authenticity if you can do that. So that would be my wish. The book is focused on boxes that I felt that I was put in or I put myself in. The flip side is we put people in boxes all the time. And writing this book made me much more aware of the boxes that I put people in.
Yeah.
But it's just being cognizant that maybe we're not being fair to some people and having a shift in mindset. I remember once my girlfriend was telling me that she had to go because she was in this dinner club. They meet every month. It's a wine club and you pair your wines with food. They pick different countries and go to different people's houses. I said, oh gosh, it sounds like so much fun. She's like, yeah, she's, I'm going to Father John's house tonight. I'm like, Father John? We go to the same church, Father John. Mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah. I'm like, why is Father John going to be at your dinner club? He started it. In my mind, that's not the image of a Catholic priest that I was raised with. And it was just like, I put him in a box. I'm just like, I was caught off guard. And then I'm like, why am I caught off guard? So it's just being more mindful of the boxes that we put people in.
No, I think, and as you say that, the thing that comes to mind for me, there are people that may be on our teams, or it may be someone you're managing that you've put in a box.
Yeah.
And that box may not clearly define their capability and what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've defined this box, you may not give them the opportunity to grow or to shine. It's very similar with kids. I have two boys. If I put them in a certain box, I don't always give them the ability to grow because mm-hmm. I'm trying to confine what they do. So it's a good reminder for us to be cognizant of the boxes that we put other people in.
Even when, like, that reminded me of when we hire somebody, our goal is making sure that they're on the right bus.
Mm-hmm.
Once they're in their seat that they were hired for, then we say, wait a minute, are they on the right seat?
Yeah.
You know, do they get it? Do they have the capacity to do it? It may not be the right seat, and that's okay. Moving them, making sure they're right on the butt, or they're on the mm-hmm. right bus, but then maybe we have to shift a seat because the skill set didn't match, the personality didn't match, whatever. Their personality profile didn't match the job role. Mm-hmm. But then we can, if we are open enough, we can shift the seat to make it a win for everybody.
No, I think that is great. And so, Betsy, I'm also going to now turn the tables and give you the opportunity to ask me some questions.
I do, actually, because to me, what you're doing now is so out of the box of what I think. I know so many civil engineers.
Mm-hmm.
So when you said you were a civil engineer and now you're doing this podcast, that was a disconnect in what mm-hmm. I thought, what I know to be of civil engineers.
Yeah.
So you clearly have stepped outside the box of what I believe a civil engineer would be. How was that journey for you? Was it difficult? Did you have any conflict or decision-making, or was it?
I think the conflict was getting to the point where I was ready to break out of the box. In terms of a typical engineer, we're analytical, think things through. We want a lot of detail in the numbers. There is this misconception that engineers are not good communicators. What I like to say is that engineers are great communicators to other engineers. It's when they have to communicate to people outside of their specialty that some challenges arise. But I think that's just about for anybody in any profession where they are more comfortable speaking to people that know their language, that know their acronyms. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was, I was working as a civil engineer. I had started my coaching company. And this is before I started doing things full time. I started coaching on the side, and I got more joy and fulfillment coaching and helping people design and live a life where they could win at work and at home than I did doing my engineering role. And when that happened, it was an interesting time in life because I could have continued to do my job and did this on the side and not give 100% to the job, but nobody would have ever known except mm-hmm. me. But because I was the person that would know, I couldn't be in integrity with myself mm-hmm. and stay there. So that's when I had conversations with my wife about what I wanted to do and what I wanted to build and where I wanted to go. She graciously agreed. For the past 2 years, I've been doing executive coaching, leadership development, and consulting full time.
Nice. Love it. And was that modeled for you living in that integrity space where... Did somebody model that for you when you were younger?
I would say my parents modeled a few things for me. One was integrity and the other was work ethic. Mm-hmm. My mother was a pastor. My father was a metal worker. He welded metal on the side of 18-wheeler trucks, and he also had his own auto body shop. I often tell the story that my dad was an entrepreneur before I knew what entrepreneurship was. I never gave him credit for being an entrepreneur because... what he was doing was just trying to make ends meet. He was good at what he did. He had his side business. I looked at both of them walking in integrity, being a person of their word, and the work ethic. My father worked all the time and did everything he could to support us as a family.
What do you feel like is the biggest box you've ever been put in that made you uncomfortable?
Oh, the biggest box that I've ever been put in is because I am 6'4", close to 300 pounds. I'm always looked at as a sports person, football player, basketball player. It's not as much now as I'm older, but when I was younger, people would try to put me in that box. I had a coworker, someone that I was going to be working with, and this was like 20 years ago. And they look at me and they say, it's going to be hard for me to take you seriously because you're the same age as my son. So she put me in this age box or my usefulness based on age. And so I had to overcome those things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, last question. What is a box that you commonly put people in?
Is the useful, useless box. Based on their conversation, this conversation is not going to be beneficial to me. So I'm not paying attention. I'm turning off. Or this conversation I can add value to and benefit from. Let's have the conversation. But I'm very quick to compartmentalize. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the box that I put people in conversations. Is it something that I can add value to? Is it something that I can get value from? Is it mutually beneficial? Mm-hmm. Or do I see this as someone that is going to be constantly pulling and not contributing? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's probably the best way that I can put it.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
No, you've answered them all.
No, I think that is great for our podcast listening audience. They're going to want to get a copy of the book and connect with you. What's the best way for the audience to connect with you?
I have a website. It's just my name, BetsyPapine.com. There you can sign up for a free newsletter. My social handles are on there. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn. The book will be available September 23rd through Amazon, Audible, and all major bookstores.
Okay. All right. So Betsy, I am going to end this podcast episode like I end every podcast episode of the Engineering Your Success podcast. And that's this. Many people know what to do. Fewer people know how to do it. And there's a select group of people that actually follow through, do it, that enables them to live the life of their dreams. And Betsy, I want to thank you for being part of that select few and for writing a book to help others join you as well.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Engineer Your Success with Dr. James Bryant. Do me a favor and subscribe to the podcast. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player. Many people know what to do. Fewer people know how to do it, and a small fraction of people actually do it. I believe that you can have success both in business and in life, and it's my passion to guide you on your path to engineering your success. Thanks.